All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. I can promise you all a full 4-hour show today.
All right.
A weird week.
We're working today.
Weird week with some day baseball. This happens during the baseball season.
Two
Yesterday
days.
Was really early start. So full 4-hour show today. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we'll be joined by our guy, Josh Vernier, our Royals insider. He joins us normally each and every Wednesday throughout the season, but obviously we're off a little early yesterday. So Vern will join us at 12:30. We'll talk to him about the first two series of the season. Two series that the Royals lost. Still looking for that first series win. They'll have to try to get it beginning on Friday when the Baltimore Orioles come to town. Hopefully they can get the series in and everything like that as we take a look a little bit on what the weather looks like Friday and Saturday for the Royals. But that's where we're going to start today as well. Not only will we talk about it with Vern, but yesterday's performance. Once again, we sit here and we talk about a pretty dominant pitching outing, say the least, from Cole Reagans. Strikeout numbers, what we saw a ton last year. That was the Cole Reagans that we know. The opening day, Cole Reagans wasn't sharp. Said, don't worry about him. He'll be fine. And he was fine, to say the least, yesterday. Did everything you could ask for. Any complaint you have about a 2-4 start should not be related to pitching at all. It should not have anything to do with pitching at this point. I'm not saying
For the most part, the bullpen's held their own. For the most part, the starting pitching's held their own.
It is all about the offense, which was the biggest question yet again heading into this 2025 season. And through six games, it once again remains a question.
I think so. The Cole part, you and I had somebody had asked in the text, I'm like, what if he struggles for two starts in a row? Mm-hmm. We don't have to worry about that. Looked pretty good yesterday. The whole 10 strikeouts and 5 innings of work is not the most egregious way to start your day. Yeah, he was great. The offensive part, the problem is like when you know your problem and then immediately it starts coming to fruition, that's a scary feeling. You're like, hey, I'm not sure anyone in the outfield can hit. And then none of them hit. You're like, I don't love that. Like not moving runners over, not getting runners home from third, like the extra innings, right? Not just doing productive out stuff or everything in between. And because they've had pretty neutral weather, I would say to start the season, you can't even be like, well, it was 40. What do you want them to do?
Right.
They played inside a dome for the last three games in Milwaukee. And a Milwaukee team who, after the first game of the series, was playing like the worst team in all of baseball. They're not the worst team in baseball. They won 90-whatever games last year. But they were playing like the worst team in baseball. And you can't hit them? Like at all? And this is what it looked like their offense last year. If Vinny, Bobby, and Salvi are having even just mediocre days, no offense. And that's what we saw yesterday. If your main core guys are India now, too, but if your main core guys aren't getting hits, then you're dead.
Right.
You're dead in the water because nobody else is going to pick up the slack.
More so that, like, yesterday, honestly, a little bit less than how I felt about Tuesday. Yesterday, Peralta is one of the best pitchers in baseball.
He is.
Right. He's very, very good. Even if the offense was rolling, that's a guy that can shut down most lineups. It was more that what happened Tuesday, and then you saw it again happen yesterday. But you're right. I mean, as much as we look at the question marks we knew about, and you brought up the outfield again, as much as that is true, ultimately this offense on a daily basis, like on Friday when they play Baltimore and however they look, it's going to come down to how a couple of those guys in the middle of the order do. You know, if Jonathan India still looks great, but if Jonathan India is having a bad day and Vinny's having a bad day, well then, you got to have Bobby have an unbelievable day. If you're getting the first four guys in the line, really the first five, I guess you could throw Massey in there, but the first four in the lineup doing something. Okay. Well then you're going to probably be able to make up for what's not happening at the bottom of the order. And rarely during a season, you know, you might have that off game that somehow the bottom of the order actually does have a pretty solid day at the office and you can make up for it. But generally speaking, a majority of the 162, you're going to know, did the offense have a good day by simply looking at 1-4 in the order? It's pretty obvious with most teams in baseball, but especially this Royals group that has really everything tied into the first four in the lineup.
Yeah, and I'm guessing part of it or part of the issues here that Bobby's off to a slow six games. Look, I'm not here to panic or tell you to panic or anything crazy.
His timing may be a
little
off.
He was the runner-up for MVP last year. Every single hitter on the planet goes through a stretch like this. It's not uncommon or weird or out of character. It's pretty standard. And so I'm not like overly worried. Oh no, he'll never make it now. But it does, like, you had a chance to start the season well because the starting pitching, now you've had six starts. I would say you had two that were, one that was bad. I would argue the walk of one was just not good, right? Like, you're just going to lose that game when your starter struggles in that way. Two that were average in Reagans and Lugo, and two that were excellent in Bubich and what you got from Cole Reagans yesterday. So maybe three that were average. So you're like, okay, that feels like enough to get more than two wins in six games. If I'm telling you there was one bad start out of your starting pitching out of a full six games, and I would say five of those six games, the bullpen did their job. Did they give up zero runs the entire time? No, they lost the game on a walk-off bunt yesterday. Yeah,
that just always stinks more, especially when you went out there.
Bunts, the most embarrassing way to lose.
And they went out and they talked about it. It was a perfect bunt for the scenario. And then it didn't matter, but I don't know why Sam Long was trying to throw to first. It wouldn't have mattered.
Like, no, he just was like, I should do something.
Just instinct.
If anything, you should have just, it was a perfect bunt anyway. I don't think it was going to go foul.
Just hold on to the ball.
You should have just not even picked it up. You should have just prayed it hit some invisible pebble and went to the foul territory. Cause it was right on the line.
Yeah.
But it was a very good, I don't think it was going to go foul. But based on you were never getting the guy out at home, so it didn't matter anyway.
Overall, though, not worried about the bullpen. There's been some individuals that haven't looked as sharp, but not worried about the bullpen, not worried about the rotation. It is all number one right now, the offense. And until one through four are hidden well, there's going to be games like this. Hopefully that doesn't last into the weekend. Hopefully we're not talking about this again still next week. Because if those guys at the top of the order are hitting, we're probably not focused even more on guys like Renfro and Melendez. Like, we know that they struggle to get hits, obviously. But the focus on them will be far less if you all of a sudden are getting more out of Salvi and Vinny and Bobby and India. I mean, that's just the reality. And I know, like, in a perfect world, we've said it. Like, we knew, you know, someone I'm sure is thinking, listening, that, well, then why didn't they fix the outfield? We've got over it over and over, right? They didn't.
Chose bullpen.
They chose bullpen. They tried. They didn't succeed at doing that. And yeah, they're going to live with what this is. It's why Jonathan India's played a lot of left field already this year. And they're trying to get Mikel Garcia in the lineup because, yeah, they know. Like, they don't have the bats in the outfield. Yeah, they're trying to cover for it for now. And in order for them to have the season we all hope, more than all of a sudden Hunter Renfro hitting well, it's as long as Bobby, Salvi, Vinny, and Jonathan India are hitting consistently.
I will say, and it's far too early for the, like, where is he not here yet part of the conversation, but the ingredients of get Jack Caglione called up by July, that pot has started to brew. It's not bubbling or ready to cook, but, like, he starts to play a game. He didn't even play a game until Friday. But like what we said, they're going to have to essentially get zero offense from their outfield for months in order for you to eventually be like, So, like, step one was,
there's nobody else to call up right now.
Yeah, no. Step one was kill it in spring training. He did that, remember?
He did.
Step two was then the offense in the major league level has to really be suffering, especially at the outfield position. The only final ingredient remaining is, can he go slug his ass off in double and triple A over the next 3 months? Because, again, it's not happening anytime soon. You shouldn't get your hopes up. It's happening anytime soon. There are still questions to be asked. But, yeah, at some point, those voices are going to get louder. If they get no offense from 5 through 9, people are going to ask him. And the problem is they don't have to come up and be the savior of the offense, which is, like, what we've been – you try to avoid when you're a competent baseball team. When you're, like, winning and getting to playoffs consistently, you're doing these things. One guy is never the hero who will drag our offense out of the depths.
No, I will say, though, in Cag's case, whether he gets called up this year, whether it's in August, whether it's not this year, the bar and the expectation from the fan base is already unrealistic. I'm just saying, like, that's just what we do as fans, right? Like, we the bar, whether you're asking him to carry the team or not, which they won't be, whenever, whether it's his debut this year or 2026, the expectation and bar is so darn high already for Cags because of what he has done. And I get it. There should be excitement. But that one, I don't even, like, it's not even so much about expecting him to carry an offense. No, they've got a superstar in Bobby Wood Jr. and other players, a couple of guys with 100 RBI a year ago and all that. But whenever that day comes for him, yeah, the expectation is going to be crazy.
Yeah, I'm just saying it gets worse if you're the 21st best offense, you're three games back at the division, and nobody in the outfield still hitting.
There has to be somebody in AAA, if you're wanting, like, a shorter-term thing, as in, when I say shorter-term, like a month from now, a month and a half from now, some of those guys in AAA, that Gavin Crosses, the Drew Waters, although I'll be honest, guys, they've kind of told you how they feel about Drew Waters over the last couple of years.
I've watched Drew Waters play.
He can have as many cycles as he wants.
I'm not, like, blown away.
He did have a cycle yesterday. Yeah, like, Drew Waters had a chance during spring training to force the issue, right? To force the issue and show that, hey, no, like, I want to make this tough on you. He didn't. He didn't. A couple guys. There's a couple other guys. Why do you think they traded for Mark Canna? Because some of the other guys did not impress.
Because
Nelson Velasquez did not impress. And so that's why he's in AAA. Now, could he get called up at some point this year? Sure. He's a quicker, more likely to get called up in the next month and a half than Jack Caglione. But if you're thinking he's going to come up and just be great, there's a reason why he couldn't even make the team out of spring training. So there's not a real option right now to replace Melendez and Renfro other than what they've been doing, which is
Waters, putting, Weimer,
well,
Velasquez,
putting, well, I just mean what they've been doing, like putting India in left field so you can keep Garcia's bat in the order. But we are still six games in. If this was a six game stretch in July, nobody would care. But it's because of the first six. That's the reality of it. I get it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just whether or not you think, like, yeah, what you think is realistic or sustainable. I never pretended like I thought this was going to be a world beater offense. I didn't think they were going to set a new major league record for home runs hit in a season. Mm-hmm. I knew the offense had limitations. I knew they were going to have to win via their pitching staff. The formula for their winning appears to still be in place. They're just happening to go through a even lower than normal offensive low here to start the season. Meanwhile, the rest of the AL Central, maybe the AL Central is not good. I don't know if anyone's paid attention to the standings today, but currently in the AL Central, there are five teams, and I'm going to put it this way on purpose, five teams tied for last. Okay? Every single team in the division is 2-4. Not a standout in the bunch. They are all 2-4. And so we went into the year last year, and we thought maybe one team from the AL Central was going to make the playoffs. And three did, and almost four. And we're like, wow, that was weird. This might be the regression back to the mean in the sense that now that we're getting an early feel for the division, and it is early, I want to emphasize that, and it still is only six
Today's
games.
A week of baseball now in the big leagues for 2025.
Maybe the AL Central is getting ready to take a big step back, Gold. And maybe if you get to that 86 wins you had last year, you are getting ready to win the division at 86 games. And this is a one-bid league again, you know? The AL Central is only putting one team in there because if you think the Royals don't look good, no one looks good. Whole division is 2-4.
That's the silver lining. You know, you'd rather figure out your issues and your flaws and try to get guys in a groove while everybody's struggling than all of a sudden be sitting in a division like the NL West where a team's 8-0 and you're sitting at 2-4.
Dodgers are really good in that division too. Yeah. I'd feel real bad. Dodgers are a bad start there.
Or the Braves are 0-7. You know, I'm sure they're not feeling great in Atlanta right now about their situation in the NL East. So it's, you know, I know we hate saying it over and over about how early it is, but yes, it could be worse. You could be the only team sitting at 2-4 and the Twins could be sitting at 5-1 right now and the Guardians could be 5-1. He'd be like, oh boy, already behind the eight ball a little bit. No, now you lost a series to a divisional team already. You don't like that. It's the Guardians and all that, but it's just so darn early. A week from now, things can change drastically for the Royals and for everybody in the AL Central.
Again, there's only one positive run differential team in the American League Central right now.
Really?
It's the White Sox. Okay, come on.
You're not buying that? You're not buying the White Sox?
Believe it or not, I am not buying that the White Sox plus four run differential is going to get it done. Matter of fact, the AL
They've had
in
really
general,
good starting pitching.
Right now, it's been the AL East has been tremendous. Everyone's winning. Four of the five teams in that division have a positive run differential. Zero in the AL West have a positive run differential, and the A's have been one of the worst teams in baseball. So, like, if you're saying, where are we amongst the AL, the truth is pretty much where everyone else is. Are some people doing a better job winning despite that run differential? Yes. Is it pretty much the same? Yeah. And I do kind of look at, and I don't think it's just gospel, I don't think, and we said before the season, I don't think three teams from the American League Central were making the postseason. I think it's 1-2. So all you need to do for a big chunk of the season is scoreboard watch with your competitors. Okay, great. Right now, you are no different than anyone else.
I'll be honest. I don't scoreboard watch at all right now.
Well, yeah, I just meant later in the year, right?
Yeah, I mean, right now, we brought up the standings just because people, you know, but in general, like, honestly, it's April. Don't even check the standings right now. Like, you're going to go crazy if you're doing that. Like, I mean, I was already getting mid-season form texts from friends, like the same text I was getting in July last year. Some of my friends were sending me about six games in them, and I even texted back, like, you're treating the first six games like this is August 15th of last year. Like, calm down. Like, let's all take a deep breath here. I mean, some of the texts, I'm like, I can't do this all season long. I mean, I can't have these texts all season long. It's one thing if it's July and August.
Oh, yeah. I've seen, like, this guy's never going to be able to play. They got to, like, you know, I've gotten some of those, too.
Deep breaths, everybody.
You just can't live
it's
that way.
It's got to be tough to be.
It's hard to live that way.
I get it, but, like, you know this is. Everyone's got a couple of friends in the friend group. that are the most pessimistic of the entire
group. Exactly right.
The over-optimist is too much, too. Right?
For sure.
Like, it's all going to turn around. Like, relax there, too, okay? I don't need to hear, like, it's not all sunshine and rainbows at 2-4 either. I'm not trying to pretend like they're not showing some of their preseason issues. But if we're out here being like I saw somebody like, send Zerpa down to AAA. I'm like, okay, can we chill for just a minute? I'm not saying he's off to a good start.
Opening day was a week ago today.
Like, we can wait. We can wait a little longer before we make those decisions. If you're curious where the Royals started last year through six games, they were 3-3. So we're going to lose our mind because they won or lost one game different? Would you be ready to like say they're heading to the postseason if they started 3-3? They lost the next game after that too, 3-4, by the way. Then they won a bunch of games. And the Royals got off to a nice start in April.
They did.
The same thing is still more than plausible inside their division. They do have some difficult opponents coming up. April was always going to be, and I think we talked about this. The Brewers won 90-plus games last year, so that was going to be a tough start, right, to the year. The Guardians won the division last year. Okay, that's not like an easy task. Who do they have this? They have
Orioles
Baltimore,
coming into town.
Another playoff team from last year. Like April, and I don't remember when. We very briefly brought this up somewhere along the way. April was going to be a bit of a challenge for the Royals. It was going to kind of tell you where you are. Those are three teams that won 90-plus games last year that are the first three teams you're facing. And then after that, by the way, is
Twins,
the Yankees.
Guardians, Yankees, Tigers.
Playoff team. Like, you have to get to the Rockies at the end of this month before you face a team that was not in the Major League Baseball playoffs last year. And then you face the Astros, who were also in it. So this month, they will have two series that are not against playoff teams. It's going to be a fight. And we're going to get a good sense of where this team is because of how good so many of their opponents are. And look, I'll be honest, not looking forward to catching the Yankees at a time in which they're hitting 8 trillion home runs on the road at Yankee stadiums after being on the road against the Guardians. Doesn't sound like a fun trip. Would love to get some wins here at home, but I'm not going to panic. Now, if they lose 7 of the next 10, we can have a very different conversation. But.
No question. The Royals off today, as you guys know. Back at it at the K tomorrow night, 6:40. First pitch out at Kauffman against the Orioles. Bark in the park. I mean, a chilly one for your pup out there if you're bringing out the dog. But that's Friday night. Then looks like Vinny Bobblehead. No, my dog just would not be good for barking. I so badly I want to do it. I would have to leave after the second inning. Like she's,
because of what, the barking?
She's great with humans.
It's bark at the park.
So she's great with humans, not great with other dogs. So that's the first thing. And there's no way I could just sit in my seat and she would just sit there. She would get antsy. She'd start staring at me and start barking because I would have to constantly be doing laps with the dog. We wouldn't even watch the game.
Wouldn't be enjoyable.
Cool at first. Like, oh, this is different. The smells, she would go nuts, like smelling all the hot dogs and stuff. But there's no way. And she couldn't be near other dogs.
Yeah, my dog's not good with other dogs. That'd be a nightmare.
It'd be a mess. But Sunday's Vinny's bobblehead giveaway, one of three, I think.
I go and snag one before
I'm thinking about going to the game Sunday.
I like having those things Sunday's for the garage gonna be, if I don't need them.
Sunday's going to be nicer. It's going to be a little iffy on Friday and Saturday, but Sunday should be nice. A little 1:10 first pitch. We'll talk to Vern coming up at 12:30 today, our Royals insider. To the NFL a little bit, Adam Schefter has had some news today, and last night maybe the most telling for how it could shape the front end of the NFL draft later on this month. And don't forget, coming up Thursday, April 24th, we have our 96.5 The Fan draft event at the Landing in Liberty. Watching the draft, it starts at 6. Bink and Kristen Osero will be broadcasting live throughout the first round. All of us from the station are going to be there. Our draft contest is back. $965 up for grabs, plus an autographed Chiefs helmet. And you'll get a point for player draft in the first round, 3 points if you get the right player on the right team. More details on that. You'll have to turn in a sheet up at the Landing in Liberty the night of the draft. But Adam Schefter was talking about the front five picks, really, the first five picks of the draft, and who may not be taking any quarterbacks.
And it certainly feels like the Cleveland Browns are inclined to look elsewhere aside from quarterback.
What the heck? Adam Schefter.
Starting to feel
glitching Schefter.
Like the New York Giants at number 3.
No, I think that's the computer. It definitely did not sound like that when I played
What's
it on the computer.
What's up with it? Should I restart my computer?
Dude,
Adam Schefter.
Giants don't take Shador Sanders.
Why does he sound like he's talking in slow motion?
I'm restarting my computer.
Let me try to play here.
I'm going to restart this.
Let me try to play the audio. Here's Adam Schefter talking about the top of the draft.
And it certainly feels like the Cleveland Browns are inclined to look elsewhere.
What? Okay, you know what? We're just not going to play that audio. It sounds like the Cleveland Browns are certainly inclined to look elsewhere based on that robotic nonsense.
To sum it up, guys, what Adam Schefter was saying, AI Schefter, glitchy Schefter, the Browns and Giants, he thinks they're not going to take a quarterback.
Is that the right call? Like, you got, like, we've said this before. How often are you pick two, pick three in the NFL draft? Now you know the team at pick two might not be taking one. They're just going to go Abdul Carter to go Miles Garrett next to each other, or Travis Hunter to go with Miles Garrett on the defense. Where does Sanders go? First, I never think it's the right choice. If there's a guy who is worthy of being a top 10 NFL pick and you're picking second, and you notably do not have a quarterback who is any good at all, I would go ahead and recommend taking one. Especially, like, again, if you have to hate, and I do mean not like I have questions, hate, I think, Sanders in order to pass on 2 and 3 and allow him to go somewhere else if those are your uncertainties about it. But where does he go if he doesn't go 2 or 3?
I think the consensus, even like Todd McShay has really been more open in terms of Shador, and people were like, why is he slipping down draft boards? And Todd McShay is like, because he's not a first round quarterback. Like, he's not a graded out as a first round guy.
Interesting.
According to Todd, he takes too long to make decisions, which is why he took a lot of sacks while he was in college.
Yeah,
that's the knock. But I've seen him go to the Jets at 7. I've seen him go to the Steelers at wherever the heck they're originally picking at. They don't even have to trade up to get him.
I saw him trade up to 10 once. And were they originally picking up at 21?
I've seen him slide back that far in a couple of mocks.
Yes. It would be crazy if he fell to like 15 range. I still think teams, even if, because remember, guys get drafted in the first round that don't have first round grades all the time. Like, reminder for everybody, we've gone through this enough that they're, I don't know about this year, we can ask Bink tomorrow when he's in on the show.
Especially quarterbacks. Yes.
Especially quarterbacks, any position, right? Like, there's 32 picks in the first round. There are not 32 players graded as first round picks. Spoiler, that's not how it works. There might be 15 of them, I don't know, this
some
year.
Some team might have 12, you know? Some team might have 17. Yeah. It varies.
So that's not that unusual. Even if someone doesn't have a first round grade on a quarterback, it doesn't mean he's not going to the first round. Like, Sanders will still go in the first round. That would be like, I don't know if he's going to have an Aaron Rodgers slide to pick 28 or something that he had when he came out of Cal or whatever the slide was. But the Giants, the reason why they screwed up initially because they kept the same front office and coaching staff. And so they put themselves in a spot where, all right, you're going to draft Sanders, and then, you know, you're probably going to fire this staff. So then the new GM is going to inherit Sanders. It might not be his guy, but he's stuck with them for a year. They should have made these decisions
cleaned house
earlier.
And then let them decide.
Correct. And so that's where they put him in a bad spot. I've told you, though, I think the Browns taking Abdul Carter at 2 is actually really smart. And I know they don't have a quarterback and they got to wait another year or two to get out of this Deshaun Watson mess. But Miles Garrett with Abdul Carter for the next 5 years, that's pretty nasty. That's pretty nasty. Like, you're not going to win with the rookie quarterback Shador Sanders in Cleveland this year. You know, and that, like, I know that their situation is bad, but their best long-term path is, in a weird way, in Cleveland, is actually taking Abdul Carter.
Well, part of their issue, and this is the only argument I'd make for Cleveland, is part of their issue is they can't actually get out of their bad quarterback situation for years. The Giants can be free and clear, ready for a new starting quarterback tomorrow, right? There's nothing holding them back. The world is open, and this could all be just draft nonsense. They still owe a $35 million cap hit this year to Deshaun Watson, an $80 million dead cap hit, or cap hit, not dead cap hit. The dead cap hit is way worse. It's $131 million to Deshaun Watson next year, and they will still have to pay him dead cap next after 2026 when they cut him officially, $50 million. Because they can't even cut him next year. It's $50 additional million to cut him next year. Deshaun Watson just, like, lives on this roster as, like, a weird reminder of the horrible decisions you made.
Yeah, someone said, how much longer can Miles Garrett be great? Well, he's 29. I mean, if you want to comp it to Chris Jones is 30. Chris Jones will turn 31 in July. Miles Garrett, I think, turns 30 this season. So, however, like, same question, however many
but
years.
If you don't get a quarterback. Yeah. You know, like, if you don't get a quarterback, Miles Garrett might, Abdul Carter might be a great player, but he might not have both at the same time, being good at the same time while you have a quarterback. Who's the vet quarterback who's going to be available next year? Can you just trade for, like, Dak Prescott or something?
No, Dak just signed a new contract.
I know. Just
vet quarterback available next
Brock
year.
Brock Purdy. Like, I'm just trying to think about a guy you can get in 2026, you know?
I mean, if they don't take a quarterback in the first round and they take Abdul Carter, I could see him just
drafting Jackson Dart in the second round.
Or Quinn Ewers, who had a really good pro day. I mean, a guy that has limitations, but if your roster is as good as it is, I mean, Deshaun Watson was so bad that they could, in a way, make the playoffs. I mean, if Quinn Ewers is decent, if he's a top 20, if he's the 21st best quarterback in the league, they can make the playoffs with that defense as good as it
in that division. You think just being just average play can get you?
I mean, they did it, what, a 2022?
I just, Flacco got hot late. And by the way, Flacco was not playing like an average quarterback when they made it a year ago.
Sure.
Joe Flacco was playing above his head, right? Like, that was, I mean, that's what was crazy
where they,
about it.
Even the year where the Browns almost beat the Chiefs, and the Chiefs had Chad Henne end up winning the game. I don't remember who the quarterback was then. Was it Baker still?
Baker. Yep. It was Baker.
And Baker wasn't playing good football then. I think,
but he was having a good year, I thought. I thought Baker was having a good year that year. Yeah, like, he wasn't just giving him average play. I thought he was above average. We don't have to go back and look at the stats, but like, I don't think he was just being dragged through by the defense. I actually thought Baker had a semi-decent year.
I think Stefanski's good enough where they could pull a Pittsburgh Steeler and just go 9-8 with Quinn Ewers as their quarterback.
I think Stefanski's legit as well.
It does make sense for them to take Abdul Carter, even though it's not the quarterback, just because they've got so many issues with paying Deshaun Watson.
All right, coming up next, two times under Brett Veach, they've pulled a trade off like this. Could it still happen? We'll explain that. And what about extensions happening earlier at the quarterback position and how it impacts Patrick Mahomes? That's coming up next here on Cody and Gold. This is fun. I guess we can say it now.
It took a little bit of actual working it out.
Our old producer, Nick, you guys know, he's getting married.
He is.
Next month. And in California. And so it's funny. Like, it's because, of course, our relationship being the same and why we're both being at the same time. But it is funny. You and I, we spend enough time together on this show, all right? And then when we want to go fly somewhere that might have a beach as well, also gonna be at the same spot for 4 days or whatever it is going to be out in California.
Yeah,
so
we'll be both flying out to California in May.
Yeah.
Attending Nick Schwartz's wedding.
Yeah, congrats to him and his fiance. So
they don't seem like wedding hashtag people, but we'll see. Hard to say.
I don't know.
You think there'll be a... Do you think there'll be a wedding hashtag?
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it
usually
yet.
Usually you'd already see it. So
booked
anyway,
the flights last night.
Someone says he's been engaged for 5 years. It hadn't been that long.
We kept trying to say he was pretty much engaged, but he actually did get engaged and is now having the wedding.
So that's what you were referencing when it came to the beach. Yes. In early May. Now it's West Coast. I mean, it's not like you can go in the water. The water's going to be ice cold. So it's not like going to the Bahamas or something.
No, but you can sit and look sit on the sand.
See the sounds of the, see the ocean and also hear the sounds of the ocean as well. Drew, you're also going to a beach next month too, aren't you? Or at least Florida.
I am.
Everyone on the show is going to the beach.
It's going to be the beach because he lives in West Palm Beach. So, yes.
Oh, it's... I mean, if you don't end up in the beach, then it would seem kind of silly.
Yeah. No. So anyway, but yeah, that all tied back to the song. I want to talk about the Chiefs though, because Brett Veach, a couple times in his tenure, has made the big trade. 2019, we all know, they were at a different spot as an organization. They made the trade for Frank Clark a week before the draft. 2021, they traded for Orlando Brown Jr. a week before the draft. So it's been 3+ years, almost 4 years now, since they did a move like that. The draft is a couple Thursdays from now. What, 3 Thursdays from tonight? And our draft party? Is that happening again? I would be floored.
Floored?
Floored.
Okay. I was asking because that's a decent rate of doing it.
I'd be floored because tell me, where is that happening? Because it's not the offensive line anymore. They believe Jalen Moore for the short term is someone that's going to provide them stability at left tackle. So it's not like the Orlando Brown Jr. trade where they're going to go trade for one. That would have been the bigger option, I would have guessed, like 2 months ago, a month and a half ago. The only position I could think of, I just don't know who it is, would be if they wanted to get another pass rusher on the edge. Otherwise, tell me any other position where there's a big trade to be made anymore.
Okay, so obviously I don't think it's wide receiver. But so I think that when you look at what, I don't think it's wide receiver because of what they've spent on it. I don't think it's corner because I think that they're probably in that positioning or like that positioning. I think you're probably right. Because they signed more, I think there's really only one thing they would do in a big swing, and that's defensive line. Does that seem that crazy, though? There should be teams wanting to shed defensive linemen. You have, at the moment, I think, kind of an excess of picks. It's a deep defensive line draft, so someone might be willing to let their veteran defensive lineman go in the effort to make it cheap, and you get to be good right away. Not guess if the defensive lineman you're taking in the third round is good or the second round, let's say if that's the pick you used. And instead, are guaranteed production out of it. Look, I'm not claiming the Chiefs are a week before the draft going to trade for Trey Hendrickson or anything, who could be on the market. Sounds pretty mad at his current employer.
The problem with, I know you're joking a little bit, poking the bear on Hendrickson with Drew, but the issue, that scenario is why I think is also unlikely for any of these players. Cause a lot of the veteran defensive linemen you would try to trade for require a new contract. Well, the Chiefs already are going to need to figure out what they're going to do, if they're going to do anything, with Karlaftis over the next year. Uh-huh. So I can't imagine them trading for a veteran, giving up, a first 3-round pick, let's say, for someone that also wants to get paid. And if you're not going to pay him, what you're going to give him a 3rd-round pick for 1 year. They're not in a reset mode at all. But also last year was the all in going for the 3-peat, willing to give away a pick for a short term thing. I don't think they're in that spot where I want to trade away a pick for a 1 year run at it. I don't believe they're there. So that's why I would be surprised if there was a big trade.
They're just like, they're in a weird roster spot where I don't think gold. I actually think it's easier for them to position themselves for go for it again than what if we play this all out long term? Because the young players who they like are just going to have to get extensions, or you're going to have to let them go, Karlaftis and Trent McDuffie. And what if it's on the other end? He's made big trades to acquire players. What if he made a big trade to have someone leave? He's obviously willing to wheel and deal.
Last year, but that was also the injury concern. Mm-hmm. And all of it turned out to be a pretty darn good trade. So
yeah, no, they definitely got their money's worth on that one. That was a great trade. And I'm just wondering whether or not there's something in the wake that we're not thinking of. Look, I don't think they're trading George Karlaftis, but I did find it interesting, and I thought it was well pointed out that twice he has made those kind of moves right before the draft, and he is willing to go up to the buzzer essentially in order to do it, which does make it interesting to think, like, does he have a card up his sleeve in the next 2 weeks? Because we are 3 weeks from today from the NFL draft, right? Or 4 weeks? 4 weeks.
24th.
3 weeks. 3 weeks from today from the NFL draft and our NFL draft party, as you previously pointed out, at the Landing in Liberty with your chance to win $965. But we're not that far away from doing it. And I'm just curious if there's an ace in the hole, that he might try to make an effort to make those kinds of trades. He's just been willing to do it. He's a big swing guy. I think Brett Veach likes the big move, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's more likely, if you tell me a trade scenario, that they're trading picks to move up in the draft still than going and trading for a player.
To get a tackle or what? What are they trading up for?
Well, big-name defensive lineman? Just a player they didn't believe would be there at 26 or something. I'm not saying trade up to 15. That's not it. I'm saying they're at 31, players there at 27, kind of like last year with Xavier Worthy, or 28. And then they're like, wow, okay, we didn't think this guy would. Let's go get him. So any position, frankly, would be in play there. I think that's still more likely because also the trades for players are still a fairly rare thing in the league. I know they're happening a little bit more often. We just don't see it happen as much as we do in other sports. Like I understand
the
guys
NBA,
get traded.
It's every 42 minutes.
It's still fairly rare. I understand Debo got moved, but remember the Rams couldn't trade Cooper Kupp. They had to cut him. He ended up signing in Seattle. Jamar Chase and T. Higgins ended up not getting traded. Yeah. I mean, there's multiple players that ended up staying right
Dusty's
where they're
texting
at.
Us because of my
well, I know
that's bad like, phrase.
I know. I started.
That's fine. We'll pull it later.
I smiled. I didn't.
You did. I was trying to still have the conversation. Sometimes I'm not trying to get distracted by the text.
I tried to avoid throwing the show off. When you said it, I definitely started.
I did too. I was like, I didn't mean
it. I did
that,
a double
whatever.
Take. I was like, excuse me.
That's all right. There's a.
What am I allowed to say legally? You know.
I mean, Dusty texted you. There's a drop saved in here from Dusty from today in our folder, assuming our computer's working. Yeah. I don't know.
Hard to say.
This is what it's labeled. Okay. Drew, what's it labeled? What's it say again?
I don't have it pulled up. I've heard the clip, though.
Okay. This was saved.
Alex Gold's got a real big dinger.
Why? What?
Excuse me?
What happened in the morning
What were you
show?
Talking about today, Dusty? Yeah, so that's safe. That's
safe. The conversation.
Alex Gold's got a real big dinger.
Okay.
So phrasing happens to all of us, you know?
Has he seen it?
No.
Whoa. Oh, my. What a crazy thing to say. Okay. What a crazy thing to say.
Okay. This is what happens. When we get distracted, we just go down terrible paths.
Wow. Wow.
I tried to maintain the conversation, and now it's too late. Now I'll never recover. Let's talk about something else. Let's just change topics for a minute because that's probably going to be in our better interest.
I think so.
And let's ask a question about what else Brett Veach has left to do. I saw a story from ESPN a day ago. They were talking about the Ravens already beginning the internal discussions of extending Lamar Jackson. And just like we talk about with other contracts, even though the Chiefs had originally said after the 2026 season, to be clear, two full NFL seasons and the offseason after that for the original timeline for the contract, if you wait that long, what's the number gonna be? $80 million a year? If you let Lamar get re-signed, if you wait till after the 2026 season, then Joe Burrow will be looking to restructure his contract by that time too. Hell, I mean, Josh Allen just signed one, so probably not him. And any other quarterback who's good by then, Jaden Daniels would be looking at a contract and everyone else in between. Part of me thinks that, like, you should want to expedite this with your Chiefs. I understand it's always a two-way street and that means Mahomes also has to do this. But if they wait till after 2026, he's going to be grossly underpaid for the next 2 years and then be paid, like, bonkers money at 32 years old. Is that the way they want to restructure it? Should we? I think I want the Chiefs to engage it. I want them to be doing what the Ravens are doing, internally discussing what it would look like to rework that deal now.
I am less concerned than I used to be about if any of these teams that have the clear-cut franchise quarterback, top five quarterback in the league, obviously Mahomes is that. I'm less concerned about the dollar amount now because of what we have continued to see with the cap. Like, the teams are even off on their projections in a positive way.
Yeah, Veach was by $7 million.
Yeah, $7 to $10 million off. And we just yesterday talked about, you know, the ability to flex Thursday games to make Amazon happy. There's going to be more Christmas Day games on Netflix. They're going to play more international games. Like, we might find out the Chiefs are playing in Brazil this year and Spain the year after. Like, there's so many more avenues still of revenue that the league can lean on, which is where the cap is increasing from, mainly these TV deals, if not entirely these TV deals. I'm less concerned. Like, we have to get in 4 years from now or less, a quarterback, even a guy that's 10th in the league from what we think is the 10th best quarterback in the league, he's probably going to make an average of $65 million a year.
Oh, for sure.
Mahomes at some point in his career, is going to make 85 or 90 on average. Like,
maybe
that,
100?
I mean, like, there was an article a couple years ago about, when are we going to see the first $100 million quarterback? Remember when it was a big deal? We saw the first $50 million on average? And we got
baseball players making $750 million.
So I'm less concerned about it. I also think the way Mahomes approaches his career, and he recognizes the legacy end, he's going to always give them flexibility. Doesn't mean the cap number won't be there, but he's going to give them the flexibility where I do not think I would be as concerned with that quarterback in this city with this current regime if they wait an extra year. But I'm with you where initially the plan after this latest extension was after the 2026 season. So after the year after this one, not even next spring. So that might get moved up, but I honestly am less concerned about that kind of stuff now.
Do you think that I wonder if part of this, because to his credit, Clark Hunt has done a really nice job guaranteeing the money when they need the money guaranteed. Is this about like, hey, if you want me to guarantee some other contracts, I can't be guaranteeing whatever the next signing bonus on his damn deal is going to look like for a couple more years, please. And this is more about like because obviously cash on hand, they're paying him like a top tier quarterback. Like, they're paying him this year. Like, if it's cash in hand this year, he's the first or second highest paid quarterback. It's not about the average annual for him as much as it is like, we'll make sure you get paid. He's an $80 million cap hit next year. That's not a joke. He's $78 million next season. So, like, $100 million cap hit, that's coming one way or the other. Maybe even on the next deal, as you previously pointed out. The one thing I will say about the 2026 season is he's a $78 million cap hit next year and then a $74 the year after, or a $78 million next year. So, like, then $74 in 2027. Then essentially he's owed nothing. So, like, 2027's drop dead no matter what. Then he's owed, like, $40 million a year. And I think we all know he's not going to make that because, I'll just take a shot in the dark, I'm going to guess his cap hit's not $78 million next year. And then it's probably $48 million and they convert it to cash or whatever other thing they need to do and they tear this whole thing up. I just think the internal conversations, they should be thinking about it like the Ravens. It's time to start kicking that around and figuring out where those numbers are. Not saying that they're not. I can't remember. Was it Brett Veach who said they started thinking about what the Mahomes contract was going to look at? His rookie, like his first season as a starter there, like we're already working on it.
They plan these things out. I think right now, still though, priority one is getting this Trey Smith thing done. Trey Smith, April 3rd, still doesn't have a new deal. He's on the tag. He signed it. We all know that. The deadline's not till July, but look, we were wrong. I mean, I thought when Trey Smith signed the tag, or when the Chiefs tagged him, I should say, he hadn't signed it yet. I thought, oh, this must mean that they're close. They just didn't want him to reach the open market, but they must be close. Well, obviously not. I mean, it's April 3rd.
He was on First Things First yesterday.
Yeah, he was on with Nick Wright, and they were talking about, you know, where they're at with it. This now feels like the deadline really is July, but April 24th, that's draft night. Can they get it done before draft night?
Because otherwise I got to find.
Otherwise, I think we will be waiting till July.
Yeah, probably. And then we'll have to spur that deadline again and find out whether. But that means no more random free agent pickups. They probably got just enough in order to do it. So, you know, you can't move it. I was thinking about, like, because there's all these NFL rumors, and then every day it's another, like, are the Steelers going to get Aaron Rodgers, right? And Art Rooney spoke yesterday at the owner stuff and said, I keep hearing he's coming here. You're like, okay. I mean, you should know. You're the owner.
Is that the Art Rooney voice? Is that the Art Rooney voice?
Yeah. He's a million years old. He's got to have an old guy voice. And I don't even know what he really sounds like. I just, you know, like, that's how he sounds in my head. He sounds like he's getting ready to sell Orville Redenbacher popcorn to us, you know? Man. That's the voice essentially we read at there. I was thinking about it. If he signs with the Steelers, where are they in the AFC power rankings, even if they get him? Behind the Chiefs, the Bills, and the Ravens, we all agree, problem solved there. So we have to put him, does he enter the conversation with Cincinnati, if that's the next team you have, or the Chargers, or the Texans, or anybody you think is in that four through seven range? You still think they're below all those?
Mike Tomlin, with or without Aaron Rodgers, in the same spot. They're
the seventh best team.
They're the second wild card team again, or the first wild card team. That's where they're at. The same thing. They'll go in. They'll be a wild card team. They'll have to go on the road to Buffalo or Cincinnati or something like that, and they'll be 6.5 point underdogs. And we'll say, "Wow, another year where Mike Tomlin did great job, got to the postseason, but a bunch of mediocrity again." That's where this Aaron Rodgers doesn't make him a Super Bowl contender. Maybe it pushes him for the division more than I'm saying, but they're not a contender to win the Super Bowl over Kansas City or Buffalo or Baltimore. And even if you think Cincinnati comes back to what they were a few years ago, like, they're not over those teams. No,
I will say he's got to be better statistically than what Russell Wilson was last year. 2,400 yards, 16 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions.
He was better last year.
Even if Aaron Rodgers is not old Aaron Rodgers, or just like 2 years ago Aaron Rodgers, we were still putting up some pretty good, or 3 years ago Aaron Rodgers, when he was still putting up some pretty good stats in the league, where he had 26 and 12 and 3,700 yards. He had 3,800 yards, 28 touchdowns, 11 picks. He definitely was better than Russell Wilson. He wasn't good, but he was better than Russell Wilson. I think it makes him like the fifth best team. I think it's like they don't compete for the division, but they're just as good as any of the other wild card teams, like Cincinnati, or if Houston's a wild card team, they're just as good as those teams, aren't they? That doesn't make them a threat to the Chiefs, to be very clear. It doesn't. Those teams aren't a threat to the Chiefs. You have to be a bigger player than that to be seriously considered. But, like, I think they'd be a little bit better.
I was looking at their opponents, and things change. Their surprises is what makes the league great. The Steelers, their schedule, so they play, of course, a tough, tough division. Then it looks like they have, because of where they ranked in their division, they play the Patriots, the Jets, they play the Chargers, Seattle, Colts, Vikings, Packers, Bills, Lions, those are the out of and obviously the tough teams in their own divisions. I was just trying to see their schedule, kind of where they're at. I don't know where that'll be in terms of overall strength of schedule, but the only games on paper that you look at outside their division where, like, those are probably wins right this second. Okay, Seattle, maybe Indianapolis, but are they much different than those teams? I'm not so sure they are. And then we know the Bills will be favorites in their games. The Chargers might be a coin flip game. They don't play Kansas City this year in the regular season like they did last year. But I don't know, man. I think the Steelers with Aaron Rodgers, yeah, maybe they're the top wild card, and maybe I'm not giving them enough credit.
The top wild card. That is just a
without Aaron Rodgers and Mason Rudolph, they still might be the last wild card team.
I think they're below pretty much everyone else that is a, like, we could make the playoffs team in the AFC from a power ranking perspective, if it's Mason Rudolph. Unless they draft Shadur or they take Sanders at 21 or whatever, fine. But, like, outside of that, who is it?
Someone on the text line did
say.
They
don't like the way I say it, yeah.
No. They were just saying, Drew, the voice you were doing for the older person is the same one you said was Bane last week on the show.
I realized
Cody, you weren't here on Friday. Drew was doing a Bane voice. People were giving him a hard time. and he matched it up. And we're like, okay, you were closer than we thought. But that is true. The voice he just did was what he said Bane was last Friday.
Yeah, I think my old person voice, it sounds accurate. But I think the Bane, as I was saying, I was like, this sounds a lot like the Bane voice. I mean, it's funny, though, that Art didn't know exactly what was happening with his own franchise. Like, well, I think A-Ron or Aaron or whatever the hell his name is.
Yeah, he's just an old man. Us,
that's definitely the same Bane voice you did last week.
I don't know.
It's a little more, it is kind of, yeah, now that they're saying it, it does have some similarities to, and Bane. I didn't hear your Bane voice, but it's kind of
the good news is we're just a couple months away from another golf leaderboard update overseas across the pond. Now we get a Masters one coming up in another week. Well, yeah, you'll be in charge of that one, man. The Masters leaderboard up. The final four is done after this weekend. Once the final four is over, Jim Nance hustles down to Augusta, and that means the leaderboard updates kick in next Thursday.
Oh, I'm excited for that.
Next Thursday is the Masters, right?
Let's go. Yes, it is.
Jim Nance is better for the Masters than basketball.
Oh, 100%, which is why he's not doing basketball anymore.
Exactly right. Now, I did see, we didn't get to this last week since we mentioned Nance's name. Did you see, though, I don't know if he was asked, and that's what prompted the answer. He was interviewed by somebody, I think, last week, and he said that he wants to do the Masters for another, like, 10 or 11 years.
2036.
Yeah, thanks for the 10-year heads up on your retirement.
Yeah, I didn't need that long of a heads up.
The reason he brought, I think it's not necessarily, I think he was asked when he thinks a good time to end things would be.
Oh, okay.
And he was saying the 100th anniversary of the Masters, which will be 2036, and that would be the host essentially for that.
April 14th, 2036.
And then be done with it.
Yeah, but on the Masters, he's unbelievable. I mean, he's perfect for it. He's incredible, iconic, all of that's true.
I like a little more juice with my basketball announcers.
Yeah.
Iron Eagle is perfect. Paired with Bill Raftery, I don't know how much better it gets.
Iron Eagle across the board.
Top notch.
Might be my favorite, just like
him and Kevin Harlan are the top
him and Harlan
two right
are really
now.
Pretty
they're
much
if we did the quick updated play-by-play power ranking, Kevin Harlan would still be at the top for me. But
the Kansas
Iron Eagle's
City kid part helps.
Think you want to talk about
he's
energy.
Great.
I mean, come on. He makes every moment just feel big, every play feel big. Like there's a lot of very, I actually still think Joe Buck gets hated on too much. I think he's done a really nice job with Aikman on Monday Night Football.
Tirico's still top five.
Tirico's solid.
Gus Johnson has fallen way off the board. I believe, you
he
know,
he also just doesn't, you know, I mean, he has the big noon kickoff games, I guess, with Joel Klatt. But
I think he tries to, like, Maserati Marv. Like, we don't need a nickname
that's
for everybody.
Him. That's just
like,
who he is, though.
I know Gus.
Right? That's his whole style, right? Like, I'm with you. Sometimes it can be a little much, but, like, he's doing the basketball games for this Crown tournament in Vegas.
Yeah.
And that tournament has zero juice, but he does his best to make it feel like it's important.
He was doing the Butler game yesterday.
Yeah. Your alma mater lost to Boise State. I saw that.
I mean, yes, but Butler was also 15-20, and Boise State was 26-10. They better have lost to him.
Yeah. Yeah, Boise State's going to win the crown, man. I think they're playing Nebraska.
I'm sure.
Nebraska.
In the semis, yeah.
Lost, what, 8 in a row heading into the tournament or something. They need to make the Big Ten tournament.
You
going to
wear some Boise State blue tomorrow?
Support your squad.
For the crown, I'm good.
For the crown.
Okay.
But they're playing for the crown.
That's right.
Nobody cares. Has anybody watched a single second of that? Did you watch some of that?
I did watch a little bit, actually, last night.
Oh, okay.
Boise State. I watched the Butler game yesterday.
It was 100-93. I mean, it was a lot of points if you just wanted offense.
That's fun, at least.
Yeah. Nobody in the crowd, by the way. They're doing it at MGM Grand Arena, the Garden Arena, which is where they've had some boxing matches. They're not doing it at T-Mobile.
They're probably just like showering free tickets on the casino floor and still couldn't get people to go.
Nobody at these games. Yep. I mean, it is empty. And I understand it's weekdays, but like, it is weird. I mean, the Final Four is taking place on Saturday night. Saturday afternoon is the semis in this crown tournament. Like,
you're trying to get people stuck on the couch to just tune in, you know?
I guess. Pre-basketball
warm-up. I mean, hopefully,
warm-up.
Look, part of me wants it to overtake the NIT because this has NIL money involved. So I do think it's cool that the
good
winners
the
last night, you were able to say on the broadcast, hey, the winner of this guarantees their team $50,000 for NIL. That's pretty cool. The winner of the whole thing gets $300,000. Like, I mean, that is a pretty cool concept in today's day and age of where we're at in college basketball. So that's why the tournament could grow. But otherwise, right now, I mean, there's no juice around it. Come on.
No offense to my alma mater, but you're 5 games below 500. You shouldn't be playing in a postseason tournament. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't
disagree. For their players, good for them. They lost, so I guess they didn't. They were a win away from making an extra $5,000 a piece or whatever, however many on the roster.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Anyway, up next, 11 o'clock hour. Let's talk more about the bullpen, what we've seen and what one player, his track record already tells us about his time in Kansas City. Plus, we just had a one-year anniversary of something around Kansas City yesterday. We didn't have time to get to it. We'll bring that up and how it maybe has changed a year later. Next.